passed out the committee assignment request sheets, so if you haven't received one, you can ask Karen for one. And please hand them in to Karen today or tomorrow if you want to give it some thought. Okay, Dr. Pierce, whenever you're ready.
All right, thank you, John. Tab 5 has all of the information we'll need this morning to deal with sea herring. There are six items, I believe, in the binders. Some actually were distributed this morning. The first, of course, is we have the status sheet. Then we have a letter, number one, to Paul Howard. We have the update that Lori Steele has put together, the update regarding the stock and the fishery. Number three, a letter from some sea herring fishermen to both Rip Cunningham as chair of the multi-species committee and Paul Howard. Number four is the presentation that Lori is going to provide, and I believe that covers it. A couple of other letters, actually, from the small pelagic group. That's number five and number six. So you have those to reference as we go through my relatively brief presentation. Now, the pelagic committee has not met since the last council meeting. Even though we have not met, a great deal has occurred, and that's summarized in the paperwork before you. In addition to those council-related sea herring initiatives that actually stem largely from follow-up with the National Marine Fisheries Service, we have some Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission initiatives regarding sea herring management that dovetails rather nicely with council federal management initiatives for sea herring. And I'll briefly describe those actions since they're quite important. They're very relevant to some recent actions that were taken by the National Marine Fisheries Service. So I'll highlight some of those management actions for your information. Just a reminder of the Amendment Number 1 actions to bring ourselves back up to speed. Remember what's gone on before us, actions we've already taken. In Amendment 1, if you recall, we changed the boundaries of sea herring management areas. We came up with a 3-year specification process. We developed the research set-aside program, which was implemented, I believe, April 11. We also, through that amendment, came up with the per seine fixed gear only area that was effective June 1, and it extends through the end of September. The limited access program, of course, that took so long to develop, other aspects of the amendment as well, of course, have been implemented. Framework 43, that was the framework that dealt with the haddock catch cap. The cap from May 1, 2007 through April 30, 2008 is about 405,000 pounds. The cap for the previous year was 161,000 pounds. And last fishing year, we had a reported 17,700 pounds out of that cap landed. And to date, for the current year, the current fishing year, there has been no reported take of haddock as part of that bycatch cap. Reminder, we have the current 1A quota being 50,000 metric tons. If you recall, the council position regarding the Area 1A TAC is 50,000 metric tons for 2008, next year, and 2009 as well. The National Marine Fisheries Service has proposed 45,000 metric tons, and as part of that change in the council decision, there's a shift of that 5,000 to Area 3, which is the Georges Bank area. A little later on, after Laurie gives her presentation, after we get through with that, I will make a motion, not on behalf of the committee, but on behalf of myself, for the council's consideration. And that motion actually is relevant to the presentation that Laurie will be giving. All right. Now, before she does give that presentation, it's important for us to cover a couple of things that happened just recently. That is, the National Marine Fisheries Service closed the Area 1A fishery, 50,000 metric tons, reports were provided by the service, emails, contacts made by the service indicating that the 50,000 metric tons was taken. Of course, that announcement that came out in mid-August caused a flurry of action, quite a bit of confusion, the renting of garments. In other words, I know I tore my shirt open in a sudden fury because of the consternation that caused me and the other states, for that matter. Chaos and frenzy occurred. It occupied a lot of our time, states in particular, as we all struggled with the industry to try to determine, to try to understand what exactly, did happen. How in the world could that 50,000 metric tons have been taken so soon, leading us to a closure of most of August, September, October, November, and December? That's a very lengthy closure. Well, fortunately, soon thereafter, the National Marine Fisheries Service, to its great credit, pulled back that closure notice because they took a closer look at the landings data, and with that closer look, they found a number of data entry errors in the dealer reports. So thanks to the service for that very quick attending to concerns expressed by the states and by the industry regarding the amount of landings. Also, thanks to the state of Maine for its working so closely with the National Marine Fisheries Service to try to figure out what exactly had been landed. In hindsight, this turmoil, this confusion regarding how much herring had been landed has a very beneficial effect. It's better that we find out the reporting problems now, the data entry problems now, before we get deeper into the year and we find ourselves perhaps with an overage that cannot be accounted for because we're towards the end of the year, an overage that might have to come off of next year's quota. So it's good that this happened, believe it or not. I think all of the aggravation, and I believe the other states would echo my feelings regarding this issue, that it's good it happened now so that we can get the bugs out of the reporting system for sea herring, especially with our knowing that the service has proposed 45,000 for next year, which will put even more pressure on the states to deal with our specific effort controls to slow down the landings. So the fishery is back in operation. That is, the 50,000 metric tons has not yet been taken. One additional note regarding what's going on with sea herring management, certainly at the state level. Once again, I note this because it's important for the council to understand, probably already does, but I'll highlight it. We, that is the states, certainly Maine, New Hampshire, and Massachusetts specifically, working with Gulf of Maine herring, Area 1A specifically, have met and we continue to meet to deal with Area 1A fishing effort restrictions, days off, to try to slow down the take of herring in order to prolong the quota, whatever it may be, as deep as we can into the year. We had a meeting last week we had a meeting up in New Hampshire and with the fishing industry present, at least those who felt that they needed to attend. And through our own initiative, as we continue to do, we've had another day off. Another day is being taken off Thursday, so Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 4 days off in the 1A fishery, once again in order to prolong that the lasting of that quota. All right, there's some other state initiatives that I won't go into. I'll stop there. That pretty much summarizes what has been going on regarding management actions at the council level and at the interstate level, ASMFC. With that said, I will, if there are no questions regarding what I have just described, I'll turn to Lori and have Lori give us the presentation regarding the review and the update of the herring stock and fishery.
Okay, thank you. This will be a relatively brief update. Like David said, the herring plan development team did not meet to develop a full safe report and make recommendations regarding the fishery at this time because We are in an interim year of our newly established three-year specifications process. If you recall last year, when we did Amendment 1, we set up a three-year specifications process and required a safe report every 3 years with a general stock review in the stock and fishery review in the interim years. This is what this review is. So I put this together with the help from a few people on the plan development team, and it's relatively general. All of this information can be found in the report that is behind tab 5 in the binder. I just pulled a few slides and tables to go over some of the major points. This graph shows the trends in the Science Center's bottom trawl survey for fall, winter, and spring. We've added the 2006 fall and winter as well as the spring 2007. The fall 2006 and spring 2007 numbers are very similar to what was observed in 2005 from the trawl surveys. The trawl survey, all of the trawl surveys, fall, spring, and winter, are generally pretty variable for herring. The long-term trend is obviously upwards. It's been upwards if you look over the course of the time series. However, the most recent 10 or 15 years really don't show much trend. The surveys have been quite variable. This is for all of the survey strata, meaning the entire range of the Atlantic herring resource. The next two graphs will show the trawl survey information for the inshore Gulf of Maine strata only. As a general practice, the PDT has been pulling the survey data from the inshore Gulf of Maine strata just to take a closer look at the trends for the inshore component of the herring resource, which is found in the inshore Gulf of Maine when it spawns. This is the fall survey for the inshore Gulf of Maine. And as you can see, we did observe an extremely high relative to recent years, a high survey point in 2006. This was after 2 years of declining surveys. 2004 was the highest of the time series, and 2006 is the second highest of the time series. Again, there's a lot of variability, so one survey point does not usually indicate a trend. It's really hard to determine from these data what the trend may be, but the 2006 fall survey was much better than the previous 2 years. The next graph is the inshore Gulf of Maine for the spring survey, and similarly, although not on quite as large a scale, the spring 2006 and 2007 points did increase. This was from a very low point in 2005. As you can see, the survey numbers are still very low in the inshore Gulf of Maine in the spring, but the last 2 years have increased slightly. Sorry, you can't read this table. It's hopefully a little clearer on the handout, and it's provided in the document. This is just a graphic illustrating the total catch of herring from the IVR reports, the interactive voice response. These are the reports that we use to monitor the quotas in the various management areas and determine when 95% of the quota has been reached. This is just a total for the entire year 2006 compared to 2002 through 2005. And in general, I mean, if you look at these lines, you can see that the fishery proceeded in 2006 pretty much consistent with the way it's proceeded in previous years. There was a little bit of variability in terms of some of the catch in the various management areas. The Area 1A catch, as usual, was fully utilized. And in Area 1A from January through May, the catch did go over. There was a 5,000-ton limit for January through May. We did exceed that limit, but it didn't really affect the distribution of the fishery for the rest of the year. The reason, my understanding is the reason for that is that most of the catch came in right during the last week in May, and by the time the IVRs came in and were processed, it was already over. But the fishery, if we go to the next slide, you'll see the Area 1A fishery in general until later in the year proceeded pretty much consistent with previous years. The 2006 fishery did close a little earlier than previous years. I don't remember the exact date. I was just talking to somebody this morning, and I think it was late October last year versus late November or early December in some of the previous years. This is just for comparison purposes, a table illustrating VTR landings by management area and by gear type. The VTRs and the IVRs were generally pretty close. About 2,000 tons more was documented in the VTRs, but, you know, that's after, the IVRs are a hail weight that's reported weekly, and usually by the time we compare to VTRs, there's a little bit of difference, but not terribly significant. The 2006 landings of herring in total were up 9.2% from 2005. And as I mentioned, Area 1A was fully utilized, and Area 1B, the Area 1B did go over in 2006. In general, with 101,985 tons landed, it's pretty consistent with the way this fishery has been for 15 or 20 years. It's always been right around 100,000 tons, give or take a few thousand tons, up from 2005, but within the realm of what we've observed in past years. And like I mentioned, a little bit of shift in terms of the management areas that were fished in 2006. There was a significant increase in the Area 2 fishery and a pretty significant decrease in the Area 3 fishery. Area 3 is the offshore Georges Bank area. This is the area where we have been trying to encourage more fishing effort. And unfortunately, in 2006, we saw a pretty substantial decline in effort in that area. Some of the other information that you'll find in the document that's been updated includes information about landings from state waters. From what I could gather from the state reports and from the ASMFC information, there was about 532 metric tons of herring landed from state waters only permit holders in Maine and about 14 metric tons from Connecticut. The vast majority of the state waters only catch is from fixed gear, weirs, and stop seines. I did also pull the bycatch data, the observer data for 2006, and what was available for 2007. This is provided in the document. It is the data appear to be very similar to what we've seen in some of the previous years that we've looked at. In 2006, there were 46 trips observed, 18 on midwater trawls and 28 on pair trawls. No observed trips on purse seine vessels. In 2007, my understanding is that 198 sea days have been allocated for observing the herring fishery, with an additional 50 what they're called discovery days, meaning there's just a pool of available days out there to observe USA at sea processing operations if they occur this year. When I put this report together, I was only able to pull the data for 14 trips. That's all that was available in the observer database at this time. In terms of what's in the data for 2006 and 2007, like I said, it's pretty consistent with what we've seen in previous years. Spiny dogfish, herring, mackerel, scup, and haddock were observed as the major species that were caught as bycatch in these fisheries. Overall, bycatch as a percentage of total catch on these observed trips was quite small. And as I mentioned, there were no purse seine trips observed in 2006 or 2007 year to date. Also available in the document is an update on the Canadian New Brunswick weir fishery. Oops, sorry, go back. What's the last bullet? Sorry. Nope. There you go. The Canadian New Brunswick weir fishery, the landings in that fishery for 2006 were 11,641 metric tons. This is similar to 2005. It is down overall. If you recall, when we develop our specifications, we usually assume that the New Brunswick weir fishery is landing about 20,000 metric tons. So if this trend continues and the numbers in that fishery stay low, that may be an assumption that the PDT will want to take another look at during the next specifications process when we have a year or two of additional data. Also in the document is just a general discussion of the status of recent management actions affecting Atlantic herring. David touched on this a little bit already. Amendment 1 that was approved by this council last year and submitted to the National Marine Fisheries Service did become effective this year. Some of the measures became effective on April 11th, and the rest of them became effective on June 1st. This includes the limited access program. As of now, 36 limited access directed fishery permits have been issued, 33 limited access incidental catch permits, and 2,200 open access permits. There are still several applications that are pending and under review, and I believe the appeals process is still ongoing, so these numbers will change a little bit. The herring research set-aside process was implemented in Amendment 1, and we are currently going through that process right now in order to allocate research set-asides for 2008 and 2009. The proposals have been received and are currently under review, so that process is moving along, and the research funds should be available for the projects to occur during 2008 and 2009. The Framework 43 haddock catch cap for the herring fishery for the 2007 fishing year is 404,991 pounds. The previous catch cap, which went through April 30th, 2007, was 367 pounds with 17,709 pounds reported. When this report was put together, there was no catch reported against that cap for 2007. And lastly is a table which is also in the beginning section of the update document that just describes the 2008-2009 specifications. The first column indicates what specifications are in place for this year, 2007, and then, as David mentioned, the National Marine Fisheries Service final rule for the specifications includes a few things different than what the council had originally recommended for 2008-2009. This table includes the council's original recommendation in the middle column, and to the far right is the proposed specifications for 2008-2009 according to the National Marine Fisheries Service final rule. So for 2008-2009, the Area 1A quota will be reduced by another 5,000 tons, bringing it to 45,000, and the Area 3 quota will be increased by 5,000, bringing it to 60,000. Everything else within the specifications is consistent with what the council recommended. Of course, the research set-asides change just because they are based on percentages of the management area TACs. And that's it.
All right. Thank you, Lori. Any questions for Lori regarding her presentation? Fishery in the stock. I see none. Therefore, Mr. Chairman, I would like to make a motion. Not on behalf of the committee. This is on my own initiative. After giving further thought to some of the stock status information provided, specifically to what we saw in the fall of 2006, and I refer you to page 6, figure 3 and figure 4 in the document that Lori has prepared for us with assistance from many others. That's document number 2. After looking at the fact that we're now we now have in our hands the fall 2006 bottom troll survey data for the inshore area. And after noting that it is the second highest in the time series, it seems to me that this information warrants our indicating to the National Marine Fisheries Service that we would like the service to reconsider the 45,000 metric tons that it is proposing for Area 1A for 2008. Just reconsider it. The council position is 50,000 tons. That's for 2008 and 2009. Therefore, I will make this motion that the National Marine Fisheries Service reconsider its proposal to implement an Area 1A TAC of 45,000 metric tons for 2008 and 2009 and implement the Council's 50,000 metric ton Area TAC and Area 1A TAC instead. The basis for reconsideration would be the fall 2006 bottom troll survey data. That is the second highest in the time series. Not served, it's a series. And if I get, I have a second. Therefore, I'll make.
Is there a second?
Seconded by. And I have just one other point to make regarding this motion, and that is, Pat can certainly correct me if I'm wrong, and I may be because it's been a while since I thought about this. It seems to me that one of the reasons why the National Marine Fisheries Service decided to go with 45,000 was the desire to be more cautious, to be more precautionary. And I believe that the service was influenced, and understandably so, by a risk analysis that was presented. Actually, it was a risk analysis presented by a member of my staff functioning on the plan development team. That's Steve Correa. So I understand the reasons why the service went with the 45,000. However, in light of this information, second highest in the time series, it seems that a reconsideration is warranted, further reflection on this particular, on this information. And that's what the motion is, to just request that the service consider this information and reconsider its proposal.
The seconder wish to comment? Terry, you were the seconder. Do you wish to comment on the motion?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I fully support Dr. Pierce's motion for all the reasons he laid out. The reconsideration of on behalf of the agency of the 45,000 ton metric ton TAC, I think, is in order, particularly given the data trends that we've seen in the inshore trawl survey. I'd also like to thank Dr. Pierce for recognizing DMR's efforts to resolve the reporting issues and let you folks all know that we're continuing to work with National Marine Fisheries Service to plug any other holes that are there, and including our state landings. So that quota monitoring of this Area 1 TAC is a reality for us all.
Any other discussion, Council? Jim Weinberg.
I've just been looking at this for the first time this morning, but it's true that the fall survey in 06 was the second highest on record, but if you look at the spring data from 07, there isn't a big blip there. So, and I think Lori pointed that out. So it's just, I think if there was a big slug, that there might be, it might show up in both the spring and the fall surveys, but I don't see it.
Anyone else on the council? John Nelson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Jim's point is probably very valid, but I think that it's an unusual circumstance that probably resulted in the 06 spring survey not picking up any herring, and that is probably because, as I recall, we were flooded out in the spring of 06, May, That influence of fresh water was extremely dramatic and affected a great deal of the Gulf of Maine, and probably had quite an impact on the various fishery. I know it certainly had a tremendous impact on the fisheries in our area, which extend hundreds of miles to the sea from the state of New Hampshire. But I think that if when the data is looked at and they put the various climatic information available to look at that. I think that they'll see that spring of 06 probably was affected by that type of freshwater influence that took place. So the fall survey probably is more realistic as far as what is the trend. I'm not going to bet anything as far as the overall abundance, but I think the trend is on the upward swing. And so I think the request for the service to take a look at it again is a reasonable request.
Pat Kirkle.
Well, I don't see anything here that's different than what we had in front of us last year. Although there was an uptick in the spring survey this past year, if you look at the 3 years prior to that, it was actually quite low. And the same with the fall survey. This year wasn't an anomaly. It's 3 years in a row now that we've had fairly low survey results from the fall survey. And as Laurie pointed out, that really it's varied without very much trend over the last several years. So there doesn't seem to be anything jumping out here that's strikingly different than last year that would lead us to a different conclusion than we reached last year. So I think that the council's, well, I'll just leave it at that.
Dr. Pierce, then Mark Gibson.
Yeah, it was appropriate, obviously, for Jim to raise the issue of the spring data, and, of course, Pat is referencing it as well. But let's remember that the spring data are here, but they're not using the assessment. We judge where we are relative to the abundance of herring using the fall survey. That's really what we focus on. Spring data is provided just for us to see, basically. So let's not give the spring data and the fall data equal weight. They don't have equal weight. It's the fall survey. That's what needs to be looked at. Again, this is just for Pat to have another look-see. And I guess she's already had the look-see, and she's given us her opinion. But still, I think it's appropriate for us to at least make the request, and perhaps someone on her staff who deals with the assessments can ease her mind regarding the importance of the spring survey, and then with her staff factor in this data point in the context of the risk analysis that was done that led her and her staff to conclude that 45,000 metric tons was the better number. I think an argument could be made I won't make any argument. No further arguments. That's it. So that's the motion and the logic for it.
Mark Gibson.
I have a question and then for Lori and then maybe a comment. It's my understanding that the fall survey catches primarily juvenile herring, whereas the spring survey catches more adults. That's what's said about the main inshore fall survey, that it's could be a recruitment index but not a measure of SSB. Is that the same true for the federal survey?
That is the case for the state surveys, the Maine and New Hampshire and Massachusetts inshore surveys. I'm not so sure that's the case for the bottom trawl survey. I have not looked at the length frequencies on the bottom trawl survey in a long time or anything like that, but it's generally thought to capture the age distribution of the resource. It captures older fish.
I guess I don't have all the information that I would want to comment on, but I remain concerned, like Dr. Weinberg, about essentially three zeros in a row. There's really no change there. Those are effectively zeros relative to the rest of the time series in the inshore survey. So I don't see evidence to support this motion at this time. Thank you.
Frank Lump, then Dave Gaethel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Laurie, probably based on the comments you just made, too, about the inshore in the Gulf of Maine, New Hampshire, if you look at the time series for the fall survey, 2006 is the second lowest point in the time series. So is that room for concern?
Are you talking about for the NIMS trawl survey?
No, figure 7.
Sorry.
page 8.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the inshore surveys. Well, these are the main New Hampshire bottom trawl surveys, generally thought to be an index of recruitment. 2006 was lower than 2005. I can't really, the PDT did not go over these data, and it's really hard to say whether that's a cause for concern because the time series on these two are on this survey, fall and spring, is pretty short, 2000 to 2006 or 2001 to 2006. And really, if you look at across the survey points, there isn't much trend. It's pretty variable. The fall 2006 is the second lowest of that time series, but the spring 2006 is higher than it was in 2005. So it's really, it's hard with all of these surveys for herring to really identify much of a trend in any direction.
Dave Gaethel.
Lori, call your attention to the charts and graphs on pages 10 and 11 of document 2, specifically to the various allocations to the areas. Now, it's area 2 is southern New England, right? And that's where we have a degree of intermixing of the two stocks, and we're uncertain as to what that degree is. So if we increase the catch in area 1A, do we have to decrease the catch in area 2 to keep the catch constant, or what basically happens? I remember we increased catches in one area and decreased them in another. Is the reverse going to happen now?
Well, that's something that is considered when we go through the specifications process and consider different ways to distribute the catch across the management areas. This motion is really, and this is what I was going to ask for clarification on. I was wondering, my assumption is that this motion is to essentially request that NIMS reconsider the specifications for 08 and 09, reconsider implementing what the council had originally recommended, which is the 50,000 in Area 1A. It would not require any change to the Area 2 quota because when the council developed those specifications, the analysis that was submitted to NIMS already considered the 30,000 in Area 2. And it was 50,000 in Area 1A, and the council argued that the analysis in the document, you know, justified that recommendation. So going up to 50,000 for 2008 and 2009, assuming that we're going with the original council's recommendations, would not require any additional change to Area 2. What NIMS did in the specifications for 08 and 09 is reduce Area 1A by 5,000 and increase Area 3 by 5,000. Area 3 is known to be offshore fish only, and an increase in Area 3 does not affect the inshore component of the resource. And my understanding is that that increase in Area 3 was, again, just to try to encourage some of the effort to go into the offshore areas and to provide additional opportunity in case the Area 1A fishery closed earlier. But those are the trade-offs that are contemplated during the development of the specifications. The council went through that process when it originally recommended 50,000 in 1A and 30,000 in 2.
Okay. My last question then would be, is there any updated information on the intermixing rates? This was a big area of discussion, consternation, whatever, during the Amendment 1 development process. And as you look at the Area 2 catch, and it's creeping up towards, you know, getting close to perhaps 100% in the near future, you know, what these intermixing rates are is going to be crucial to determining how we apportion attack amongst the various areas. So I was just wondering if there is any updated information.
Not that I'm aware of for this year. The information regarding the mixing rates was updated, and the best available information was used at the track in 2006, last year when we did the herring stock assessment, which we then used to develop the specifications for 07 through 09. It's only been a year since then. There is, I'm sure, ongoing work, in that in that subject to address that issue. And when the next stock assessment is completed, I'm sure that all of that information will be brought forward so that it can be considered in the context of the next track.
Terry Stockwell, and then I'm going to go to the audience.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. A quick follow-up to Frank's question to Lori about the Maine, New Hampshire Inshore Trawl Survey. Last year, the trawl survey staff reported an unusually large number of miss stations due to the weather and to an increased, rather decreased, encounter with lofty gear conflicts. They're about to start their trawl survey again, I believe, next week. And we're working, trying to work with the lobstermen, but it hasn't been successful to date.
Okay, in the audience? Jeff? And then John Williamson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Congratulations on your reelection, too. I'm Jeff Kalin from Portland, Maine. I work with the fishing vessel Providian and Ocean Spray Partnership, and I just came to the mic to speak in favor of the motion. One of the things that really troubled us about the NIMS position last year was their perspective on the risk analysis, on the retrospective bias that is inherent in the assessment, apparently, in the models that are used for the assessment. And I've been tracking this stuff for over 30 years. I've only understood it for about half of that period of time, but I think it's highly unusual for a retrospective analysis bias to be used to reduce a TAC in a portion of the stock complex, particularly one that hasn't been peer-reviewed. And wanted to point out to the council that the 30,000 metric ton, actually 29,000 metric ton reduction between USABC and OY is there, I think, primarily to account for the retrospective bias that appears to be reoccurring in the assessments. So we are very conservatively managing these stocks, and I think if you take a look at the amount of herring that's around this year in the Gulf of Maine, by all accounts, even staying at 50,000 is very conservative. So we'd like to strongly support this motion and ask for your support so that we can take a few more fish next year. Thank you.
John Williamson.
John Williamson, Ocean Conservancy. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and congratulations on being elected for another year. Variability trawl survey seems to be the big question in front of everybody at the moment. And I want to remind everyone that the data that is being reported this morning is not an assessment, stock assessment. It's simply the raw data that contributes to a stock assessment. And when you have high variability, such as is being described by John Nelson and Terry Stockwell, conditions affect the catch in the trawl survey tremendously, and that's what creates the variability. When you have that high variability, it translates into very large CV bars around the stock assessment advice. And that is what is being said to you by Pat Kirkle, is that those CV bars have not changed. There's still a big room, a lot of room for error in stock assessments for herring. And that's why you manage it so conservatively. Harkening back to the recommendations, the risk analysis that was done by the PDT last year around the specifications and their reason for recommending a very low number for the inshore 1A area, and that was based on two things. I'm glad Jeff Kalin brought up the retrospective pattern. That retrospective pattern played a very big part in their advice. And it is true that it's very rare that you see a stock assessment being and a specification being modified down because of a retrospective pattern, and we're glad that that was done. It's very rare, and it should be done more often. That is how you adjust for that uncertainty. That's how you adjust for the fact that sometimes the stock assessments get it wrong, and then they have to be monitored and adjusted for. And you do that through your quota setting process. And the second thing, I'll just remind everybody that the PDT, your PDT, did a risk analysis, and their recommendation was a 35,000 metric ton quota for 1A. And then a 50,000 ton metric quota for 1A was your compromise on their recommendation. And then 45,000 metric tons was how it was resolved by NIMS. So the original recommendation was substantially lower than 45,000, and there is nothing that we see in this report this morning that would change that.
Steve? Then I have Peter Moore after that.
Good morning. My name is Steve Weiner, and I'm here to speak on behalf of Choir. The concern that Choir has with any TAC discussion really is that we do not believe that we have a handle on what's being landed today, and we don't believe we have a handle on what's being caught and dumped at sea. And to me, you know, Jeff Kalin says he's understood it for the last 15 years. I still do not understand a lot of how tacks are set, and I don't understand a lot of the science behind it often. But I do understand that to measure, to set any limits on any fishery, you need to know it's being caught. And today, that process, as I understand it, is really a process where skippers of the boats, captains of the boats, and the dealers report in some fashion. I don't think it's always timely, as past events, recent events will show you. They report their own catches. We do not believe that's an appropriate way to report the catches of this fishery. Secondly, we do not believe that we have any handle on any of any kind on what's being dumped. There's very few observed trips. If bags aren't brought on board, they can be dumped. They don't have to be brought. I'm not even sure if observers know what's in a bag that's dumped. So what we would ask is this council to put as its priority in 2008 so that we can have a responsible discussion on TAC to discuss, to put some real-time monitoring and accountability into this fishery. Because I think when we really understand what's happening, I have great fear that our tax, I don't know where our tax are going to go, but I think there's a lot of fish being dumped. And I speak for a lot of fishermen and a lot of commercial fishermen and a lot of professional people on the water. We're concerned. Thank you.
Peter Moore.
Thank you for recognizing me, and I am going to speak to the motion. I have lots of other things I'd love to talk about, but I know we're supposed to speak to the motion. And I guess that I would support the motion. I know that the service has weighed in at this level. My fear is that where this council process is heading is that it's not deferring to the science enough, and in this case, all we're asking for and all Dr. Pierce is asking for, or we're not, Dr. Pierce is asking for is a reconsideration of the data by the scientists who are trained and who work with this data every day. You know, and I'm not here to influence the discussion one way or another. I just want to know why we can't reconsider the data and reconsider this and get an answer for the next council meeting. Thank you.
Vito.
My name is Vito J. Callum. I'm the Executive Director of the Massachusetts Fishery Recovery Commission, and ditto from Vito for your election. Thank you. Before I support the motion, which I'm going to, I'd like to say thank you to the directors of Maine, New Hampshire, and Massachusetts for the work they've done on the spawning closure of herring in the Area 1A in the days out of sea to stretch the herring fishery so there'll be plenty of bait for tuna fishermen, lobstermen, crabmen, aquariums, so on and so forth to enjoy. Mr. Chairman, for the past 13 years, I've been in front of the New England Fisheries Management Council giving anecdotal information that has been actually very accurate for the last 13 years. Anecdotal information is coming from my past as a third-generation fisherman and a captain of a pelagic fishing venture. There has been large amounts of herring reported to me from fishermen, from spotter planes, and from lobstermen of fish from down east Maine all the way to southern New England. Beside that, Mr. Chairman, we see large masses of zero-age class of fish that we haven't seen in years in the harbors of Gloucester, Massachusetts, Manchester, Massachusetts, Beverly, Massachusetts, and Salem, Massachusetts. The clouds are so thick in our harbor of Gloucester, people have stopped the boat because it was so black in front of them they didn't know what it was. But it's I call them zero because zero age class because they're 2 inches and under. Anecdotal information, again, comes from mainly the fishing industry or the fishermen. And for the most part, we run pretty close to what does come out from a PDT or scientific information or surveys. So I just wanted to pass that on and say that we're in favor to increase it up to 5,000 tons. And I thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity.
Thank you, Vito. Gentleman in the striped shirt.
My name is Jeff Hughes. I'm Wellfleet herring warden. That is the river herring. And I've got a few small concerns, I guess, in relationship to the sea herring. I realize that as little as 1% of the bycatch might be river herring. My main concern is the time frame in which this bycatch is caught. I recently, this past spring, saw these pair trawlers going up and down the coast of Wellfleet, apparently within 2 miles, maybe even a mile, it seemed to me. The time frame is when we have pre-spawned river herring out there, and they could possibly be wiping out our local runs. If I could see some sort of adjustment as to when these trawlers were allowed to come into these local waters, like if between the second week of March and the last week of May they weren't actually allowed to come so close, I think it would have a tremendous effect on the local herring runs. Thank you for allowing me to be recognized.
Al.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Al West. I work for Stinson Seafood, Bumblebee Foods. We're the last U.S. canner of herring on the East Coast, actually in the United States. As Vito said, anecdotal information, I think, is important to this fishery because it's so diverse and it moves around so much. And I appreciate the fact that the council has to work with the science and the one or two data points that are on the sheets that you've been given. I personally am one of the few individuals in the business that speaks with every fisherman and probably every processor of herring on the East Coast, and I do this on a weekly, daily, and monthly basis. So I'd like to think, and our company and our parent company in Canada probably purchase close to 25% of the entire catch from all the areas on a yearly basis. So I would like to think that I probably am plugged into what's going on in the fishery. And the reason I'm here is I would like to support David Pierce's motion as well, and it's very seldom I agree with Dr. Pierce, but today I do. Basically, in the early 2000s, in the early 2000 years, I would agree that the herring was having problems. This year, we have seen better availability of all the different size classes, and in my mind, they're rebounding. As a matter of fact, we've had to take days out of the fishery. We've had to have complete no fishing in spawning areas, which has slowed the fishery down. We've had limited access permits. We've had no trawling from June till the end of September in 1A. And yet the boats continue to catch fish. The availability is very good. In the last 2 days, at our plant in Prospect Harbor, we've had 1 million pounds of fish sitting at the dock. Each morning, Monday morning and this morning, there were 1 million pounds sitting there. And that is not because the herring is a dying species and we can't find it. The availability is good. And again, the sizes are there. We're seeing everything from 4-inch to 12-inch herring. So I would very much appreciate your giving his motion consideration. Thank you.
Okay, one more. Peter.
Peter Shelley, Conservation Law Foundation. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the time series that we care most about is the one that used to exist for this fishery in the early 1900s, when there were tens, if not hundreds of millions of pounds caught through weirs because of the abundance of herring in the inshore areas. We want to see something on that order restored to this fishery. I'm very disappointed to see the scientists from Massachusetts put forward a motion that is trying to be less risk-averse than the service has been. We appreciate the service's approach. We think we ought to keep this catch as low as possible in order to restore the coastal fishery and the coastal fish populations and all the other fish that will follow from that. And I would also request a roll vote, please. Thank you.
Back to the council. Anyone who hasn't spoke? Dana Rice.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and my congratulations and commiserations for your re-election. I want to support this motion, definitely, for the reasons that the maker and all of the supporters have already mentioned. And second, because of some other things that have already been mentioned, you've heard a lot of comments around here about anecdotal data, which is very important, and I think one of the things we want to remember about anecdotal data is some of us for years said we have a problem in the herring fishery and the science of the data didn't support it, and then it caught up to it. Well, that was my take on what happened. And then we had the Herring Amendment 1, which came into place, and I can anecdotal data and things that I see and things that my friends see, fishermen in Area 1A, are showing is it is working. There are a lot of herring on the coast of Maine, and there are Brett, Sprat, as Vito calls them, zero age group herring in places that they haven't been. There are the herring up acting like they acted several years ago when there was no concern as to the numbers in there. And then right now, as Mr. West has just mentioned, there's been the last 2 days been 1 million pounds at the dock in Prospect Harbor for the last 2 days. And the interesting thing about that to me is those 1 million pounds are coming from further north than they have been in the last 10 years. They are coming from down in an area called Moose Peak, which was one of the best of where the most recorded spawning occasions happened over a period of time. So the reason that I'm supporting, and I mentioned these things, is I think Herring Amendment 1 put a lot of things in place that are showing results much faster than I would have expected to see with my own eyes. And I think it far outweighs the negative side of the risk analysis. I would wholeheartedly support this motion, and I urge the service to
take some of this, some of the fisherman's point of view, and I know you can't do that, Pat, but herring is very important to me for a lot of reasons, and I've put a lot of time into this, and if I thought that the herring resource would not support 50,000 metric tons in 1A, I'd be the first guy to stand up and tell you to go down. But I'm sure that it, in my own mind, and with all the information that I can gather, that 50,000 metric tons is no danger to the herring resource in Area 1A. And I urge us to use our heads and look at the numbers and what you can see in the report you can get from the people that spend day after day, year after year on the fishing ground to consider those things and not be swayed by politics. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Pat Kirkham.
Just one quick process point. There is no mechanism for reconsideration of a decision. So if the council actually wanted to change the specifications, they would have to resubmit a specification package. So just so we're clear in the process.
What would that entail? Does that mean we have to update analysis, social, economic, to an EA?
Well, I don't really understand that. We submitted a 3-year specifications package last year with an EA that fully analyzed the impacts, social, economic, and everything else of the specifications that we're proposing right through 2009. So I can Xerox it and submit it with the letter. The only new information we have is right here in this report, but I'm not really clear on why a new EA would be necessary. The council's EA from last year included analysis that spanned 3 years.
Anyone else? Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question for Pat. If we went through the process and submitted the correct paperwork to you, would this then allow you to make adjustments in either direction of the TAC in 1A?
Yes, that's right. As a specification package, we would make the final decision on the numbers.
Dr. Pierce.
Again, just a clarification. This is a proposed quota. The service is put forth. There's no final quota yet. Therefore, this motion is just asking you to, you know, factor in this information that has been brought forward in this presentation today, the fall 2007 data point, six data points specifically, to... So the need for additional paperwork doesn't ring true to me. I guess I just don't understand the nature of your process, Pat, that would require us to do a lot of work in order to convince you not to implement something that is proposed in final form that's consistent with the council position that it took months ago.
Well, it's not actually proposed at this point, Dave. When we considered the council's package last year, we implemented 3-year specifications. So at that time, we set the specifications for this year and next year as well. And so, in fact, if none of us takes any action, then those are the specifications that would be in place. To undo that would require a new package that explains what the rationale is for the change in decision, basically. And would need to present the most recent information.
John Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would have been probably helpful to hear that early on. Well, as I recall, the council also passed the motion that it would review the specs for the coming year. And so if it's going to follow through on that, if the work plan calls for that to take place, Well, that was the motion that was passed, so this is the review. All right, and I think that we had that review was going to then have the council forward a spec package. If it was going to change the, if it saw the need to change the quotas that were being established by the service, that they were, that's the time we were going to do that. That's what I recall the motions were. I know Paul's shaking his head, but my recollection is pretty good too. And I think a record would show that we were going to revisit this and make a revision as necessary. So if we have to do that, I guess is what it boils down to, then I think that that's the process that we should take. And so this motion needs to be modified to reflect the fact that we would want to resubmit a package that would reflect whatever the quota is that we were felt was appropriate for the coming year.
John, as you recall, during priority discussion, we had to something had to fall out, and Herring fell out. But we said because there was so much concern about Herring, we decided we'd do a review, but that we wouldn't take action. And if we were going to take action based on the review, one of the priorities would have to fall out. You know, in other words, if you want to take action now, we're going to have to delay Whiting for the next 3 months. I understand the data is going to be available soon, and we were going to start Whiting right again. So that's how it ended last time, that Herring didn't make the cut for action.
Okay. Then, Mr. Chairman, what I'd suggest is that the motion, or a motion needs to be made to determine whether or not you're going to change the action plan. And this motion probably needs to be tabled until after that decision is made. If we're not going to change the action plan, then that's the issue. So I'll move to table this.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave Gaethel. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Ten opposed. Four. Motion is tabled 10-4. Lori?
Okay. Okay. I was going to make a comment on that motion, which I'm still going to do. I was going to request that the first sentence of that motion be changed to say that NIMS reconsider the council's recommendations for the 2008-2009 specifications, just to clear things up because there are some changes to Area 3 that are a part of that. Now, I'm not understanding why a full specs package and action would need to be taken to do that. The council took this action last year and submitted a specs package with analysis for 3 years and with justification. When the council submitted that specs package, the council was making the argument that the information in that document supports those recommendations and supports those recommendations for 3 years. Now, Pat Kirkle just said that if we want to ask NIMS to reconsider this, we need to do a new environmental assessment and explain why the rationale has changed. The bottom line is that the council's rationale hasn't changed. What the council is saying is that our arguments and our rationale and our justification and our analysis from last year still stands. And just to drive that point home, here is the updated survey information that suggests that we're headed in the right direction. There is no change in what the council's recommending here. The council recommended it last year. It's the same rationale. It's the same justification. And it's the same analysis. So really, the only thing I see needing to happen here is that we would submit a letter with this report attached saying, please reconsider what we submitted last year because we still believe it to be true.
I'm hearing that's not the process that NIMS would recognize. So I've asked Pat to try to explain it once again.
I think it's actually fairly straightforward. If nothing has changed, then the decision isn't going to change. And so the council needs to update the package, provide additional rationale for what they think has in fact changed that would lead to a different conclusion than we reached last year. And there is no way through a letter to change regulations. It's a regulatory process. There are regulations in place. You need to go through a regulatory process to change the regulations. So it's exactly the same as the specification process that we went through last year, and in fact that we've explained will be necessary each time in these multi-year specifications if you want to make a change after the decision has been made. So this is the process that we'll need to use any time we implement more than one-year specifications and want to change what has been implemented and put in place through regulation.
Dana.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. this is very troubling, but if and it wasn't the way that I think most people on the council understood the process. However, if this 5,000 metric ton and the issue that this 5,000 metric ton represents and all of the indicated processes that we have to go through to make an adjustment on a yearly basis in the fishery is troubling, and I just don't understand why it needs to be as difficult as it is. That's one of the reasons that a lot of people say I think that the council process does not work. I think the council process does work, but I can. And so, I guess I'm beginning to get steamed here a little bit. But I guess the point I want to make, Mr. Chairman, if this has to be tabled and we have to come up with another motion to deal with this and put another important issue on the back burner, I'm wholeheartedly in support of it. I don't think that we should just say, oh, hum, well, we're going to lose another 5,000 metric ton in the fishery. I think we need to look at this information that's out there and question a lot of things, and if it takes up time, it takes up time. This is a hugely important issue, Mr. Chairman, and I'm waiting with bated breath for somebody to make the appropriate motion, and I'll second it.
Before people get steamed, Dana, the reason that motion was tabled, I think, was a response to the comments from the service, which simply were, if you just write a letter saying, please reconsider, nothing will happen. You won't accomplish what it is some of you want to accomplish. So I think tabling the motion was the right thing to do, and now essentially we're about to have a discussion about whether or not we want to do just as you said, which is to perhaps put whiting aside and address this issue so that we can submit a refreshed specs package, if you will, with an EA or not. And I think that's what the decision needs to be. Lori?
Yeah, I'm still having a hard time understanding why this is a new action, when what we're really doing is just reinforcing the action or re-supporting the action that we took last year. I did not say that nothing hasn't changed. I said that the council's rationale hasn't changed, and the justification that was provided in that document for supporting the council's recommendation has not changed. Additional information is available to continue to support that recommendation. That would be the argument that the council would be making. And my question is why the National Marine Fisheries Service does, my understanding is that NMFS does have the authority to adjust any of the specifications or the management area TACs during the fishing year. Why could this action not be taken as part of the regional administrator's ability to adjust the TACs during the fishing year?
Dr. Pierce, are there other items that you're going to bring up today under Herring?
Yes.
Okay.
I do share Laurie's perspective, but I'm not in a position at this point in time to make any motions to move this forward, since I suspect they will be difficult to pass.
Well, here's what I'm thinking. We're still running ahead of schedule, according to the published agenda. I'm thinking I'm going to take a 10 to 15 minute break and try to figure this out instead of trying to hash out what the process is or isn't. So I'm going to suggest we take a 15 minute break, and those that want to caucus, please do so. Herring. Dr. Pierce, please. Quiet in the room, please.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With your calling for a timeout, we assembled in two different groups, and with the assistance of Pat Kirkle and her staff, we've come up, we believe, with a strategy that makes the most sense, that is reasonable, and I believe is a strategy that Pat believes she can work with, but of course she can speak to this issue once the motion is made. This is going in a slightly different direction than the way we had previously discussed prior to the break, and it's a strategy that would involve our taking advantage of what's already in the plan, that is the in-season adjustment aspect of the plan. And frankly, it also gives us an opportunity to, we didn't speak about this in the groups, but Lori raised this as a point once I touched base with her, and that is it also provides us with an opportunity to get fall 2007 information once it's available to see if it confirms what we've seen fall 2006. So it's an in-season adjustment. The motion reads that the council requests consideration of an in-season action for next year to implement the 50,000 metric ton Area 1A quota. This action would be based on updated Northeast Fisheries Science Center fall survey information. That is the motion. And it's just been seconded, I believe.
Seconded by Dr. John
Nelson. And the Paul Howard indicated during our discussions that That's it. We had a lot of discussions. I'm now referencing the wrong discussion. So that is the motion.
Okay. Anyone else on the council before I call the question? Dave Gatham.
Request a roll call.
Okay. Dave?
Just to be sure, what additional staff burden does this place? Okay. It's just a letter.
Sally?
Yeah, just to be clear, I'm not sure what this exactly does, because I assume that Pat can do this anyway without a letter from the council. Is that not the case?
Pat?
Well, the in-season action can't be used to change the specifications, which is what the council was talking about earlier today. However, there is a provision that allows for an in-season action based on information that might become available that wasn't available when the specifications were set, so during the fishing year, basically. And we can make that change, but in consultation with the council. So we can consult now, or we can consult later if, in fact, the fall information indicated that there was a basis for a change.
Anyone else on the council? Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will ask sort of the same question I asked before, Pat. Can this in-season adjustment be either up or down?
Yes.
Okay. Paul Howard. Sally.
If the answer to that question is the case, then having a request to implement a 50,000 metric ton TAC doesn't seem appropriate. I mean, that's presumptuous. We should just ask that mechanism be used, not that we assume what the outcome is going to be. So I don't see that saying up front implementing a 50,000 metric ton quota in Area 1 is the right thing to be doing. It's the cart before the horse.
Dr. Pierce.
No, I think the 50,000 metric ton figure, the council's original intention, is appropriate. We'll be using primarily, if not solely, the fall bottom trawl was survey information. Again, second highest in the time series for fall 2006. I see the worst-case scenario being that if the fall 2007 turns out to be poor, then the service would be in a position to say, no, there's no way to justify having an in-season adjustment. But obviously, as she said, she could go down if she cares to. I'd be very surprised to see that action taken in light of the information we've gotten from the fall 2006.
Pat Kirkle.
Yeah. I just want to be clear. I still don't support the motion. We were looking for a process way to do what the council was interested in doing, and this seems to be the best way from a process perspective to pursue it. But frankly, I don't think a change is appropriate based on what I've seen. And if we see new information, we could consider a change then. But I think that if the council wants to look at this now, then this is the best way process was.
Okay. We're going to have a roll call vote. Ask Paul Howard to carry it out.
Please answer yes, no, or abstain. Frank Blount. Rip Cunningham.
No.
David Pierce.
Yes.
David Gaethel.
No.
Tom Hill.
No.
Mike Leary.
No.
Sally McGee.
No.
Pat Kirkle.
No.
Terry Stockwell.
Yes.
John Nelson.
Yes.
Dave Preble.
No.
Dana Rice.
Yes.
Jim Salisbury. David Simpson.
No.
Mark Gibson.
No.
Motion fails.
Motion fails. Dr. Pierce, anything else under hearing?
Yes. Just to call attention to the fact that Pat Kirkle has responded to a council request for clarifications regarding observer coverage on USAP vessels. That is in your binder. I assume that those who have an interest in sea hearing, specifically in USAC processing, would have had an opportunity already to have read this. I only bring it to your attention to provide council members with an opportunity to comment on that response or to ask Pat ask Pat if she has anything else she would like to add regarding this particular letter. And, of course, on behalf of the committee and the council, we thank Pat for her and her staff's quick response to those questions posed to her by the chair.
Is that under hearing, Dr. Pierce?
That is the end of hearing.
Okay. Jimmy Rule, then Dave Gaethel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a few comments here. This last argument or discussion certainly supports a concern for multi-year specifications. It was my interpretation that when multi-year specifications were presented by a council, that there would be enough flexibility in those specifications to allow a change during the middle of the process. This last discussion certainly dictates to me that there is not as much flexibility. I was opposed to multi-year specifications from day one. I still am. I think they lead us to false expectations of where we want to be based on sometimes species that don't have good data information to make those decisions. It's ironic to me that, and I do believe that the in-season adjustment is a very good way to go, which we're incorporating into our Mid-Atlantic's macro plan. But it may not be common knowledge to everybody, but for a resource that everybody's so concerned over, it seems to me like it was Canada's concern a few years back about the abundance of herring that was keeping everything stifled when we were developing Amendment 9-1. But right now, Canada is implementing a midwater trawl fishery on the Scotian Shelf for a very significant amount of fish. They're not doing that because they are concerned with the resource. Something is changing, and it's changing quickly. And it's going to work to their advantage again, along with a list of other species that their history on species landings is going to increase. So I certainly have some concerns with the way the discussion went forward and the final action, but multi-year specifications don't look good to me at all.
Pat, did you want to respond?
Yes. I'm actually glad Jim raised that because I wanted to speak to that issue. I was afraid that people would, in fact, conclude that this was an issue with multi-year specifications, and it's not actually. Multi-year specification, if we did not have multi-year specifications for herring, then we would unquestionably have been in the process of doing a specification package right now, and something would have to have fallen off the priority list, and the same for next year. You have the same under multi-year specifications, the process for making a change is exactly the same as when you do annual specifications, but the process for keeping what you have is much simpler. So it's definitely more streamlined in terms of keeping something in place or making decisions ahead of time for a two-year or three-year period. If you want to change things on an annual basis, it's exactly the same as annual specifications. So I just wanted to...
Dave Gaethel, then Dr. Pearson, and I'd like to move on to Habitat.
Okay, I just wanted to call council's attention to the fact that the Heron RS research set-aside proposals are currently under review, and that Dr. Pierce had contacted me about perhaps one of the proposals proposing to take it set-aside from closed areas when they were closed. This is something we hadn't addressed as a council. The closures are actually AFMFC closures. They're not our closures, but I just want to make the council aware that this is an issue that's come up, and whether or not we want to address it, I'll leave that up to the council, but to at least make people aware that this is one unanticipated consequence that is out there. Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, two quick things. Regarding the research set aside, I'm not prepared to offer up any motion, but David did remind me that at least one of the proposals would involve fishing in Area 1A, including enclosed areas, in order to fund research in the southern New England mid-Atlantic area. And I thought that was a bit odd. And I'm unaware now, unaware of the process that we must follow to provide some further insights or advice to Pat regarding these particular proposals. Is the Research Steering Committee going to do that? I've lost track of the timeline here. Or is that something that's now out of our hands and it's just in your shop, Pat, with all of these proposals being reviewed?
The RSAs are now being reviewed through the center, and so I'm not sure where they are in the process. I don't know if I think I saw Frank earlier, whether Frank knows or somebody could find out for us.
Laurie, do you have information?
Well, regarding that specific point, that is something that the council specified in the description of the RSA process that we implemented in Amendment 1. It states that set-aside can be used from any management area to fund research in another management area. The research doesn't have to be specific to the area from which the set aside comes. The fish just have to come from that area. So Area 2 set aside can be used to fund research in Area 1A. Area 1A set aside can be used to fund research in Area 2. That's something that we discussed when we set up the research set aside process in the amendment. The Research Steering Committee is not, to my knowledge, going to be terribly involved in the set-aside process at this point. It is something that is in the hands of the Science Center, and right now the proposals are under review for the allocations for next year.
In that case, Mr. Chairman, if I had known then what I know now, I certainly would not have supported that approach regarding the research set-aside. However, it's a done deal. We work with it. My specific comments that relate to that proposal, I'll submit to the service for your consideration, and that's specific to fishing in a closed area when it's closed in order to fund research in areas where I didn't really care to have the research being done. Anyways, that's another issue. Once again, regarding the using the in-season adjustment, thanks to Pat again for offering up that as a potential strategy. The council has decided not to go in that direction. However, I may be back here at a council meeting later on in this year, more likely next year, requesting an in-season adjustment if indeed we see the fall 2007 survey data point being as high as the 2006. There will be 2 years in a row of second historical high levels in the time series of sea herring abundance, so as judged from the survey. So I may be back.
Thanks, Dave. I'd like to move on to habitat. Thank you, Lori. Sally, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd ask if